This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Frank Stacio in Washington. Neil Conan's out today. Paxil, Lipitor, Viagra. These days, we make reference to prescription drugs as casualty as we do to other consumer brands like Coca-Cola or Hershey's. Ads for prescription drugs saturate the airwaves. They fill magazines. But recently, pharmaceutical companies have come under increased scrutiny from legislators, consumer advocates, and the Food and Drug Administration for the way they market to consumers. Heavy marketing has undoubtedly raised the public's awareness of some important chronic conditions such as high cholesterol levels, depression, and heart disease. But drugs can also have serious side effects, and there's growing concern that glamorous advertising either downplays or distorts that part of the message. Late last year, Vioxx, a popular arthritis pain reliever, was removed from the market after a study showed that it increased a patient's heart risk for risks for heart disease. Manufactured by Pfizer, Vioxx had been one of the most heavily marketed drugs. Public health advocates also worry that advertising falsely conveys the impression that a simple pill can cure a patient of lifetime conditions. Almost no other country allows direct-to-consumer advertising of prescription drugs. Clearly, direct-to-consumer marketing has had an effect on the way consumers participate in their own health decisions and the way they engage with their doctors, the way that doctors weigh prescription options. Some in Congress are calling for laws to restrict the content of drug ads or the times they're allowed to play on the air. Pharmaceutical companies would rather self-regulate and have promised to voluntarily change their advertising guidelines. Later in the program, we'll look at the steps to canonization, a process to make the late Pope John Paul II a saint. They formally began today in Rome. But first, reforms in prescription drug advertisements. Have you ever asked your doctor for a prescription drug that you saw advertised? If so, did you get it? And was it right for you? We also want to hear from you if you're a doctor. How has direct-to-consumer advertising affected the way you prescribe medication to your patients? Our number in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address, TOTN at NPR.org. We're joined in Studio 3A by Joanne Silberner, a science reporter for NPR News. Joanne, welcome.
Thank you very much.
You recently reported on a study that looked at how doctors prescribing drugs and what happens when the patients ask for brand names compared to when they don't. What did the study show?
Patients tend to get what they ask for, and what they did in the study, it was quite interesting. They trained a couple of actors to go around and describe depression, major depression, you know, having trouble sleeping, no joy in life, you know, some real problems in activities of daily living. And they asked for a popular antidepressant. And 53% of the time, they got something. They got some kind of antidepressant. And more than half the time, it was the drug that they asked for.
And what about when they, and I suppose there's a control group, a group that went in, described the conditions, but didn't ask for the drug?
Well, and some of them did, yes, and some of them did get treated as well. They did get it. But the other control group was a group of people who described a much milder condition, something called adjustment disorder, basically, you know, feeling out of sorts. And that's rarely a cause for a prescription. And yet, if they asked for a drug by name, they also were more likely to get it.
Aren't we always advocating that patients take better control of their care, that they understand better what the options are so that they can, you know, act as a kind of a check against medical error?
Yes, and actually that was the original intention of these drug ads, that they would be informational. And in fact, there are some straight informational ads. One of the companies has marketed an ad with their anti-cholesterol drug. The ad is mostly an ad about you should know about cholesterol. But other ads have gone over the top. And one of the drug companies are starting to pull back a little bit. And the CEO of Pfizer the other day was saying that he realized when he was watching the debate and the concern about problems with the painkillers, the COX-2 painkillers, he realized people were sounding like they thought drugs should have no side effects. And he thought, you know, that may be a result of our advertising. We may have advertised these things as being so good and so powerful that people have assumed that they are so safe. And as he pointed out, there's no drug that doesn't have side effects.
Well, you talked about going over the top. Where is the top? There are some regulations now on how drugs can be advertised.
Oh, yeah. The FDA definitely has some regulations. Ads have to include descriptions of side effects and effectiveness. There can't be anything in there that's false or misleading. Broadcast ads have a little bit more latitude in how much or how little they have to say, because you can only fit so much into a broadcast commercial. You can refer somebody to the internet or print for more details. But what a lot of people don't realize is that these ads are not subject to pre-approval. The FDA can't do anything about them until they show up, and sometimes it takes the FDA a couple of months or 3 months to say, hey, wait a minute, you've gone over the top, you've overpromised. There were issues with erectile dysfunction ads that suggested that these drugs would improve your relationship. Well, nobody ever proved that. They proved that it would treat erectile dysfunction. Those are two different things. The FDA asked the makers of Viagra, Merck, to pull their ad. Actually, I'm not sure Merck makes Viagra, so let me take that back. But they asked the makers of Viagra to pull the ad, and
asked,
they did.
Can they demand?
Yeah, they can. They can demand. And the company pulled the ad, but meanwhile, a whole lot of people have already seen it and may go around thinking, gee, if I just take this drug, my bad relationship will turn into a good one.
Well, taking a look a little more deeply at the regulatory side, does the FDA take a look at every ad that's produced, or do they have to wait till someone brings an ad to their attention?
I think they can. Once it's out there, they can get to it.
Who's calling for changes now in the way these drugs are advertised?
Well, consumer groups mostly, and some of the doctor groups and some smaller doctors groups. The AMA considered this in their annual meeting a couple of weeks ago and came out and said, we are concerned, but we think it needs more study. But the consumer groups are really looking into this because there's an awful lot of money spent on drug ads. And you want to know that people are getting – people now that we know that people can – get the drugs they want, which is something that doctors probably would have admitted to before this study. The consumer groups want to make sure that this is being done right.
How about the industry, the pharmaceutical industry itself? Where are they in this?
Well, they've taken notice, too. I mean, there's been so much attention to drugs in the last, I'd say, last year, year and a half. And they recognize that something's going to happen. They've seen there's at least three pieces of legislation in Congress going around. And the pharmaceutical industry would always rather self-regulate than be regulated. So they've promised a set of standards to come out. Originally, it was June. I think they're now talking about July.
We are talking today about regulating the pharmaceutical industry and its advertising direct to consumers, all of those drug ads that you see mostly on the nightly news and elsewhere where they expect to see people who might be asking their doctors for specific drugs. The number to call, if you want to join our conversation, you can send us an email at totn@npr.org. We're joined now to discuss advertising in the pharmaceutical industry. Rob Schneider, director of the Prescription for Change campaign at Consumers Union. He joins us from NPR's Bureau in New York. Rob, welcome.
Thank you.
What are consumers, do you think, what are they taking away from drug ads?
Well, DTC ads are designed to...
DTC, direct-to-consumer.
Direct-to-consumer ads. Yeah. DTC ads are designed to drive people to newer and more expensive drugs. You don't see advertisements on television or on the radio, for that matter, for generic drugs, for example. Often, there are older, less expensive, well-tested, safe drugs that are already on the market. But DTC ads are designed to move people into these brand-new, expensive drugs. But I think even if you put aside the question of money and how much it costs all of us spending on newer medications, there's real questions about the health effects of DTC ads. And I think Joanne talked about some of those with the Journal of the American Medical Association study that she talked about. Drug companies have promoted this idea that DTC ads encourage a conversation between you and your healthcare provider. And I think that there's some documentation of that. That's probably a good outcome of DTC ads. On the other hand, I think the question about whether, as was raised with the JAMA article, whether it results in overprescribing, that is another question, and that's a question that really needs to be explored.
Well, I guess if Joanne, let me ask you this, if the doctors found that they were not prescribing medicine at all when a patient, in the study, if the patient didn't ask for a drug, did the doctor prescribe a drug or a particular drug for the symptoms that they were describing?
With major depression, and actually this was a bit of good news in the study from the researcher's point of view, which is when people describe major depression, even if they didn't ask for a drug, they got something, although it was much more likely that they would get something if they asked for a particular drug.
Let's go to the phones now. Jason is on the line in Miami. Hello, Jason.
Hello.
You have a phone call? You have a question for us? I know you've got a phone call, because there you are.
Yeah, I've been taking medicine for ADHD for a long time, and an ad came on for Strattera, and it was a non-stimulant. And so that sounded great. I went to the psychiatrist, and I talked to her, and she said, well, yeah, it's a non-stimulant, but I don't think it would work for you. And then that was it. You know, so that was my story. And, yeah, I was prompted to ask about the drug, but
All right, Jason. Well, thank you for that call. I want to direct that to Rob Schneider. I mean, I guess that's the best case scenario. That's what drug companies, perhaps the FDA, was hoping for when it allowed direct-to-consumer advertising, that this conversation would take place.
Encouraging a conversation between a doctor and a patient is, you know, typically a good thing. In this case, it sounds like there was a discussion about the drug, whether it was an appropriate drug for the patient. But if you kind of contrast that to the ads that we saw for the COX-2 inhibitors, those pain relievers like Vioxx and Bextra, those were, over the past few years, were heavily advertised, drug companies spending hundreds of millions of dollars on their advertisements. And those were drugs that were appropriate for a small group of people, but they were prescribed and taken by millions and millions of Americans. And I think the blame for that rests largely with direct-to-consumer ads. People asked about them. Drug companies were separately promoting them and advertising them in their one-on-one visits with physicians. But as we see now, and as Joanne talked about, there are likely some health results from the widespread prescription of those COX-2 inhibitors.
And Rob, I know that you have actually produced a bit of a parody on some of those commercials that we see every day and hear on the radio.
Yes, we did a little parody of the laundry list of side effects that you might take for a fictitious drug, side effects you might see. And I think the most ironic part is that with some drugs like the SSRIs, there are often hidden side effects that the drug companies know about, but that you don't know about.
Well, Rob,
that's even more dangerous.
More dangerous. We're going to talk more about that as our conversation continues. I want to thank you very much, Rob Schneider, who is the director for Change Campaign at the Consumers Union. Thanks for talking with us, and our conversation continues. Stay with us.
Predictions, dire predictions, life as seen in Dickens fiction. Empty pockets, court dockets may cause eyes to pop from sockets, but it's worth it for the drugs I need. But it's worth it in Canada. They get this for a song. But it's worth it for the drugs I need.
The opinions expressed in the song are not necessarily those of Squabble Co. or its subsidiaries.
I'm Frank Stacio. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Any resemblance to actual drugs, living or dead, is purely coincidental.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Frank Stacio in Washington. Neil Conan's out today. Well, do you squirm when you're watching the Super Bowl with the kids and the Levitra ads come on? Do you fall through the, you know, you're watching the TV news in the evening and one of those long prescription ads comes on? Well, until 1997, direct-to-consumer drug advertising was essentially banned. But since then, it has boomed, and some think it is too much, that the ads don't properly educate consumers about the risks of these drugs and the underlying chronic conditions that they treat. We want to know what you think today. Do the ads serve the public health? Are they misleading? Have you ever asked your doctor for a drug that you saw advertised? Are you a doctor who has been besieged by requests for particular drugs from patients who have seen ads on TV or heard them on the radio? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email address, totn@npr.org. You know, earlier in the program, we said that that Vioxx, in part of our introduction, was manufactured by Pfizer. That's a mistake. Vioxx, in fact, was manufactured by Merck, and our apologies for that mistake. In fact, Vioxx was manufactured by Merck. We are continuing this conversation with your phone calls. Joanne Silberner from the NPR Science Desk is with us, and Jack Helfy is also with us. He's a resident scholar with the American Enterprise Institute, and he joins us here in Studio 3A. Jack, welcome to the program.
It's nice to be here.
In your view, is this a safety issue? Should we be concerned about these drug ads?
Well, I'm glad that Rob Schneider gave us that little satire on drug warnings and so on, because I think what it illustrated is that probably in the past 7 or 8 years, the most powerful force for reminding consumers that drugs have side effects has been the TV ads. It's hard to hear very many of those ads without realizing that probably any drug you're taking has side effects. So I think on the whole, these ads, I mean, there's a lot of ways in which they do good, but I think one thing we don't have to worry about is the possibility that these ads are going to leave people thinking that drugs are perfectly safe.
Well, is there another question, though, involved in that? We hope that they help patients engage in a conversation about the illness and that they're informed more about the illness. But then again, ads are really designed not so much to inform but to persuade. Is there something different about an ad than an information commercial or an information message that should make us more suspicious?
Yes, the ads are designed to persuade. They're designed to sell something. They're designed to make money. And we should treat ads with more suspicion. And you'll be glad to know that a lot of survey data going back 50, 60, 70 years shows that that's exactly what happens. People are highly suspicious of ads. They are much more skeptical of what they see in ads than in any other information source they get.
What do you make of this, of the numbers of people, increased numbers of people going to their doctors and asking for specific drugs based on their what they've seen on TV?
Well, I think it makes a lot of sense. Most of the conditions that we look at, not all of them, but most of the conditions, especially the really serious ones, are where the literature documents quite a bit of under-treatment and under-diagnosis. And we certainly saw that in the JAMA article that we were talking about earlier, which is where people with serious depression, roughly half the people who presented with serious depression got what is generally regarded as reasonable care. Over 90% of the people who ask about drugs, like such as a drug ad, got a reasonable care in those situations. That was one situation in which the ads obviously helped to deal with the situation, which was a pretty serious degree of undertreatment and underdiagnosis.
We are talking today about direct-to-consumer ads for pharmaceuticals and drugs with my guest Jack Kalfy, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and NPR's Joanne Silberner. And taking your phone calls, Mark is on the line from Asheville, North Carolina. Hi, Mark.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. You have a question for us?
Yes. I'm a neurologist myself, and I'm involved with a lot of education of practicing physicians. So I get to talk to a lot of doctors around the country. And, you know, like a lot of people, I sort of see the direct-to-consumer ads as sort of a mixed thing. I have a mixed opinion about them because, in fact, I think the ads do a very good job of getting people to pay a little more attention to underdiagnosed conditions like Alzheimer's disease and depression. On the other hand, I've seen a lot of doctors who have told me that they feel their obligation is to give the patient wants or whatever the caregiver wants. So if they come in, they say, you know, I've been thinking about it. I think I want this drug for ADHD. And the doctor says, well, I need to give it to them then. I think the onus, though, is on the doctor to actually use their clinical judgment to decide whether that drug is appropriate for the patient. And I think the onus is on the doctor to discuss that with the patient and to discuss the risks of using any particular drug. I don't think that we should blame the advertisers as much as we should the doctors who inappropriately prescribe. And as I say, I've seen it happen some, but I've also seen good come from it in people asking about a disease or an illness that they wouldn't otherwise get diagnosed.
Mark, when you say the doctors say they feel they need to give the patient what they ask for, what drives that need? The need to keep the patient or the need to honor the patient's wish in this case?
To me, it seems there has been a sort of a movement towards medical consumerism, or the idea that the doctor is there to provide a service at the request of the patient. And I think some doctors, and I don't want to say at all a majority, but some of the doctors that I talk with, I think, have lost the idea that they are the medical professional that uses their medical training and have developed the idea, to a small degree at least, that they're there providing a consumer product, providing something for those patients who are now consumers. And much as in a department store, whatever the customer wants, the customer gets, in the medical office, some doctors see it that their main obligation is to give the patient what the patient wants when they ask for something. So I think that's the only danger in the ads, is those doctors that maybe don't exercise good judgment in making prescriptions.
All right, Mark, thanks very much for your call.
Sure, thank you.
Jack Kalfy, would you say the doctors are going to have to take more responsibility now, and now that these ads are with us, maybe start thinking a little more about their strategy when patients come in?
Yes, I think everything Mark said was very sensible. It's a reminder that advertising, you know, it's important, but it's a relatively small part of a very large and very powerful trend, which is where consumers are taking much more control over their own lives. They're being much more aggressive in dealing with their doctors and dealing with their medical conditions and so on. That's not all good. Like any large trend, it has upsides and downsides. I think on the whole, it's doing a lot of good. Advertising reinforces that. It's part of that. I would never claim that everything that advertising does is good. But again, I think that on the whole, it does more good than harm.
Joanne Silberner, what have you found in talking with doctors about how they feel about these direct-to-consumer ads?
Well, I was interested to hear Mark's comments because I think some doctors would complain a little bit more than what he's hearing. They'll say that, you know, they've got 5 or 10 minutes to talk to a patient, and by the time they finish explaining that Vioxx is no more powerful a painkiller than any of the other NSAIDs, it's just more some of the other, you know, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, there's really no difference except for the stomach protection or the gastrointestinal protection. And to explain that to people and say, let's try this other drug first, and if you have problems, you know, your 5 or 10 minutes are up and you haven't even discussed what the patient came in to talk about. So there's this complaint that they don't have the time to educate the patients. There's the issue of losing the patient to another doctor. There's also the issue of losing the patient's trust. There's a tremendous amount to be said for the placebo effect, that if you're giving somebody a drug for something and you give it to them with confidence, it's a lot more likely to work. The patient's going to feel better about taking the drug and take it better. So there's a temptation if a patient asks for one drug over another and the doctor's more familiar with the other drug but feels that the patient would be more confident with the drug that he's seen advertised. You know, Madison Avenue is a pretty powerful force.
Well, I want to bring somebody else in on this discussion, because the fact is that drugs, pharmaceuticals, and prescription drugs in particular had been heavily regulated before. Direct-to-consumer ads had at one point been illegal. Peter Pitts is the former associate commissioner of the FDA, currently a senior fellow for healthcare studies at the Pacific Research Institute, and joins us by phone from his hotel in Chicago. Welcome, Peter Pitts.
Hi, Frank. How you doing?
I'm fine. You helped draft the FDA guidelines that allowed broader direct-to-consumer advertising in 1997. What was that discussion like?
Actually, what I helped draft were the revised draft guidances to make the brief summary of the information that consumers get on the risks and benefits of drug ads more clear to the consumer, because right now what is in compliance and what is user-friendly are at counterpoint. They need to be the same thing. What FDA feels and what the drug company feels and what consumers feel all really are the same thing, which is that benefits are pretty broadly and brightly advertised, but risks and risks are a little bit hazier. And when patients go and see their doctors, doctors have spent a lot of time explaining that drugs have both risks and benefits. And, you know, these drug ads do drive people in to see their doctors, and that's a very good thing. But doctors want to have a more balanced conversation. And I think that if drug ads are made, are regulated differently to allow the brief summary, the risk information to be communicated a little bit more in a more friendly fashion, it will be in everybody's best interest.
Well, you've wrestled with this for a while. Is this something that really practically can be regulated? I mean, the idea of an ad is to sell the product, and that's the point. You want to sell your product.
Well, that's right.
And so what do you do about this sort of balancing act that nobody wants to do when they want you to buy their pill?
Well, you know, there are different types of drug ads. We've been spending our time talking about the ads that actually sell a product, and obviously they're very successful in doing that. But there are other types of ads that you see less frequently, which are called disease awareness ads, which are ads that discuss disease states such as diabetes, and ads that would say, you know, here are the 5 warning signs of diabetes, you know, brought to you by, for example, Eli Lilly. You know, those ads are infrequent if you see them at all, and I think the drug companies really need to step up to the plate and, you know, embrace not only ads that sell product, but also ads that educate about disease. And I think provides the dual success of raising the general image of drug companies and also helping people become more educated consumers when they go visit with their doctors.
Jack Kelfi at the American Enterprise Institute, would you be happy to see something like that, something a little less aggressive and more general in the approach?
I'm dubious of taking a regulatory approach to this. I think that some companies have a lot of self-interest in making people more aware that there are ways to deal with certain illnesses. Obesity is one of those. Certainly diabetes is one of those, heart disease, et cetera. We're better off letting them pursue their self-interest that way. We can get some good results. A little bit leery about requiring them to do something resembling public service ads.
I completely agree with Jack. I think it's up to the drug companies to make the choices. My point is the FDA should facilitate the ability for drug companies to do this and not punish them if they feel that it's not going in the right direction. It really is the company's choice. It's obviously a very strong First Amendment issue. But drug companies need to be seen as not only being in the sales business, but also in the discovery and development business, being in the public health business.
How would they do that when you say facilitate? In what way?
Well, FDA can explain to drug companies how they view disease awareness ads, which if done properly, are not even regulated by the FDA, because they only mention a company name. The company's not allowed to say they make a drug for the product, but they should go talk to their doctor. So again, you know, FDA has both carrot and stick, and I think that by using the bully pulpit and explaining to drug companies why they feel this is in the best interest of the public health, and also I think a very strong marketing rationale can be made for image enhancement, FDA can be part of the process that brings more of these ads to bear.
How much does the FDA have to say about the ads that are on the air now?
Well, you know, it's important that people understand the FDA doesn't approve advertising. FDA reviews advertising, and the reviews are voluntary. And what FDA has is the bully pulpit, and of course, if they feel the drug companies have stepped over the line, they can issue warning letters, which are taken very seriously by the industry. But FDA has to behave as both partner and regulator, and that's a fine line to walk. But if they really want to move and participate with industry using an extraordinarily powerful, you know, public health communications medium, that's what's going to have to happen.
We are talking today about direct-to-consumer ads for prescription drugs. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Frank Stasio in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. My guests are Joanne Silberner, NPR's Science Desk, and Peter Pitts is with us, a former associate commissioner for the FDA. Jack Kelphy is also with us, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and we welcome your calls this hour. Michael is on the line from Baltimore. Hello, Michael.
Hi. I am a physician in Baltimore, and the way I see this is a big part of our healthcare crisis now is the ever-rising cost of healthcare. A lot of that is the rising cost of drugs. And a lot of what this advertising does, not only the advertising to patients, but advertising to doctors too, is to push what are called Me Too drug or copycat drugs, which are drugs that don't serve any useful purpose in a sense because there are equivalent drugs that are do the same thing and are out as generic and are much cheaper, but the drug companies make these drugs because their patents have run out on their older drugs. For example, Vioxx is a good example that there are much cheaper drugs, a fraction of the cost, that do the same thing for most patients, not to mention that Vioxx turned out to be a dangerous drug, but also cholesterol medicines or acid-reducing medicines for the stomach. Most of the medicines that are coming out and are being advertised are these Me Too drugs that are just expensive, and I'd rather prescribe a generic drug that has a longer safety record and just as does just as well for my patient.
Thanks, Michael. Joanne Silberner?
Well, I think the COX-2 drugs like Vioxx and Bextra and Celebrex did offer an advantage for people who had failed on the other drugs because of problems of gastrointestinal bleeding. I think the problem there was that they were over-marketed. The marketing was so positive that people thought that they were a more powerful drug instead of a drug with a different set of side effects from the other drugs. And so I heard from a lot of people who had chronic conditions like arthritis where they're in terrible pain, needed painkillers every day, and really couldn't take these other drugs, who were willing to take the risk of a heart attack or a stroke just to get some pain relief, a little bit of pain relief, but now they don't have the option because with the overmarketing, it brought so much attention to these drugs.
Well, let's talk about the cost, too. One of the things that Michael's question suggests is that a lot of the drugs that are being asked for are really high-end drugs that are covered by insurance plans, and I don't know how much you've been able to find out in your reporting about whether most of the drugs that are asked for, and certainly the ones that are advertised, are drugs that are the most expensive and therefore would be pushing healthcare costs.
Oh, right. I mean, you're not going to spend a lot of money on an ad unless you can make a lot of money back, and I think this is one of the points that Rob Schneider makes, which is that there are alternatives to these drugs, and if these drugs take people into the doctor to talk about them and what are my choices for treatment, that's a good thing because the doctor, although very few doctors actually that I know of at least sit down and consider the cost of the drugs, that's a full-time job in and of itself, but at least if they get them thinking. But the problem is if they go and they ask for this one specific drug and it may be the most expensive drug in the class and the doctor gives it to them, they've spent money on something where maybe there was an alternative that wasn't advertised because it's a generic or because the company's operating on a tighter margin.
Right. I think what's also important is that the doctor prescribed the drug that's right for the patient, and sometimes that is a more expensive drug and sometimes it's a safe and effective generic drug. And again, I think it's unfair to say that an advertised drug is impacting the doctor's decision to make the right decision. Clearly, it's influencing the patient. But I think the doctor must step up to the plate and make the right decision that's right for the patient.
Well, that is all the time we have to talk about this today. And I want to thank all of my guests, Joanne Silberner from the NPR Science Desk. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Jack Kelphy, resident scholar with the American Enterprise Institute. Thanks so much for joining us. And Peter Pitts is the former associate. You got to be quick on this show. Okay. Peter Pitts is a former associate commissioner for the FDA, currently senior fellow for healthcare studies at the Pacific Research Institute.
Thank you,
thanks a lot. When we come back after a short break, the road to sainthood, the process to make the late Pope John Paul II a saint, began today in Rome. I'm Frank Stasio. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.